for a school district 129 school board of meeting. Mrs. Secretary, please call the roll.
Mrs. Stone?
Aye.
Mrs. St. Jules?
Here.
Mrs. Upperson?
Here.
Mr. Lathan? Mrs. Dystra? Mr. Gonzalez?
Here.
Mr. Kearns?
Here. We have need to enter closed session. Do I hear a motion?
I move to enter closed session to discuss matters related to 5 ILCS 122C1 personnel and 5 ILCS 120C2C5 purchase of lease of real property.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Mrs. Secretary, please call the roll.
Mr. St. Jules?
Yes.
Mrs. Upperson?
Aye.
Mr. Gonzalez?
Aye.
Mrs. Stone?
Aye.
Mr. Kearns?
Aye. The motion passes. We'll enter closed session.
With a smile on her face.
Public for the West Aurora School District 129. Mrs. Secretary, please call the roll.
Mrs. Dykstra?
Here.
Mr. Gonzalez?
Here.
Mr. Lathan?
Here.
Mrs. Upperson?
Here.
Mr. St. Jules?
Here.
Mrs. Stone?
Here.
Mr. Kearns?
Here. Please rise and recite the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any in the audience that would like to be recognized? I think we have a couple schools here, don't we? Glad to hear it. Mrs. Secretary, do we have anyone wishing to make a public comment to an agenda or non-agenda item?
None.
Thank you. I'd like to turn it over to Ms. Gonzalez for those who make a difference.
Okay, thank you, President Kearns, and good evening, board members. Today, for our Those Who Make a Difference segment, we'll be highlighting a very special partnership that we have with the King County Teachers Credit Union. So here to speak more in depth about that partnership and the gift that they've given to us is our Assistant Superintendent, Mrs. Angela Smith.
So as Anna mentioned, we're here tonight to say thank you to one of our great partners. And as we all know, the last couple of years in particular, we couldn't have gotten through without our partners. And the credit union is one of our great partners. So Mike is here tonight to talk about a couple programs that we have. One, if you'll remember, several years back, we actually gave our community the ability to have a branded credit card with West Aurora Blackhawks on it. And then about a year and a half ago, we moved to also using their debit card, their P card, I'm sorry, for our district business. So he's here to share that. And I always love to welcome a partner who has a big check. So without any further ado, Mike, you want to come on up and talk a little bit about it?
Well, board management, it's always a pleasure to be able to come and present to you. I do want to introduce you to Angie Diaz. She actually runs our branch here in Aurora, so she does all the hard work for your members and the people of the school district. It's just an honor to come here working with Angie and the team. As you know, our affinity card program, you were the pilot school district. We have 10 school districts on that program now, so thank you for being that pioneer. And about 2 years ago, Angie came to me and said, you know, we would love to do more with you. At the time, you had a purchase card through BMO Harris. We were able to look at it, build a product, and are able to give 1.5% back of the spend that you spend on that. So it's a very good affinity card, or if you want to call it a loyalty card. And what's so exciting tonight is because of that, the numbers are getting quite large. So tonight, we have the opportunity to present a check for $60,000. So now this is a combination of two things. The affinity card from last year produced about $7,000. And the rest of this is the P card from when it originated in July through May. So we're really excited. We expected to exceed this a lot this next year, but it is our honor. You know, a lot of you know, and it's something I forget to say sometimes, this is our 85th year KCT, Kane County Teachers Credit Union. We were originally originated by Elgin School District, and kind of a neat thing in this age of DEI, the reason our credit union was established is 85 years ago, banks didn't want to deal with teachers, and the reason why they didn't make enough money, so true story, it's kind of crazy, and sad to say, most of them were women. So KCT, that's our roots, that we started out of a group that wasn't able to get served properly through a financial institution, and that's our roots. That's how we were chartered, and then through the years, we were able to expand that. So it's just a joy for me personally because our roots are school districts, and it's thank you for that opportunity because you don't have to do business with us, but you choose to, and it's our delight to serve you. So maybe we could get a check. This is a bigger one. Or?
Absolutely.
Board members, if we could take an opportunity, maybe you could stand in place and we can give a little follow up.
Yeah.
Andrew, you want to jump in with the mic, please?
Yeah. Just a little bit to your right. There you go.
You got it.
Okay. Everybody in?
Summer, everyone. Thank you. We come to the consent agenda where we have items we have discussed in previous meetings. Do I hear a motion?
I recommend that the Board of Education approve the items contained in the consent agenda for June 6, 2022.
Second. It has been moved and seconded. Are there any further comments or questions? Hearing none, Mrs. Secretary, please call the roll.
Mr. Lathan?
Aye.
Mrs. Dykstra?
Aye.
Mr. Gonzalez?
Aye.
Mrs. Opperston?
Aye.
Mr. Sanjules?
Yes.
Mrs. Stone?
Aye.
Mr. Kearns?
Aye. The motion passes. And I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Smith for an announcement after this.
Thank you, Board President Kearns, members of the board. As a result of the most recent vote, I would like to take this opportunity to invite Mr. David Heater to join me here at the podium. Mr. Heater comes to us with a bachelor's degree in psychology from Elmhurst College in 2011, an EDS in school psychology from National Lewis University in 2013, and is currently enrolled in a Director of Special Education Endorsement Program at Northern Illinois University with an expected completion date of August 2023. By way of experience, Mr. Heater began his career in West Aurora in 2015 as he filled the role of a school psychologist. He has continued to retain this certification and title, but since 2018, he has served the district as the IEP 504 system coordinator. That said, it is now my honor to, for the first time publicly, introduce Mr. David Heater as the private or outplacement and parochial coordinator for School District 129 for the 2022-2023 school year. Congratulations, Mr. Heater.
As I mentioned, it's been my privilege to serve as a school psychologist in the district and to see the commitment in this community to all students, and I am honored to take on this new role and further serve our challenged students.
Is there anyone here that you'd like to introduce?
My wife, Mary, my daughter, Satya, my daughter, Esme, and my daughter, Elisha.
Very good. And to all of you, this is our somewhat... I guess our tradition. Dad is moving into this new role, but the expectation is if something changed in terms of his support of you, you call me, the HR guy will take care of it. Okay? All right. Congratulations again. Thank you, Board President Kearns.
Thank you. We now come to the information part of the agenda, and I turn it over to Dr. Craig.
Thank you, President Kearns. We have another installment of our school improvement presentations, and I would ask Dr. Waddell to make that introduction.
Thank you. Over the past few months, you have heard about many of our elementary buildings, some of which include early childhood classrooms. Tonight, we're going to focus exclusively on early childhood programming within the district and take a different lens to the work that's happening within our district, work with families. This year, we were able to add more parent educators to our staff, which meant that parent educators not only worked with our families of 3 and 4 year olds, but also some of our kindergarten families. Through the last 2 workshops with buildings, you started to engage in the types of conversations that are happening within buildings. Tonight, we invite you to engage in an even more difficult conversation. I want to set up the workshop by saying that the thinking and the discussing they will ask you to do tonight may be a bit difficult and uncomfortable as we really think about our families from a strength-based model and really question any kinds of conversations around deficit thinking. I invite you to lean into that discomfort and hold space for the thinking about all of our families as we try to do while we work alongside families. We often say in our gatherings throughout the year that in order to grow, we do have to be uncomfortable in order to stretch. I invite you to enter the space remembering or conjuring up what it takes to be a caregiver in our world. The stress, the difficulty, the sleepless nights, the sleepless days, the never-ending days at times, the resources that are needed to be a caregiver in our society. I invite you to stay open and curious while Beth Heldman, Kelly Pearson, and Lori Klumhouse take you through the journey of partnering with parents and families.
Wow, that's quite an introduction, so I hope we live up to this, Dr. Waddell. Thank you for having us here tonight, Board of Education. I'm Lori. I know some of you are newer to me, so thank you for being here with us tonight and having us present to you. I'm the principal at the Early Learning Academy.
My name is Beth Heldman. I'm the program administrator for our Preschool for All expansion program, which is housed in our elementary buildings. That's our full day pre-K is our common term that we call it.
They didn't tell me they were wearing pink, so I'm in blue. I'm Kelly Pearson. I'm the assistant principal at the Early Learning Academy, as well as the program that serves our prenatal moms through the age of 3, parents as teachers, program administrator for School District 129.
I think that's the clicker.
Wow.
Very good. So what we're going to do tonight is you're going to need probably something to write on, or however you are choosing to take technological notes is great. But we're going to talk about strengths-based perspective and really what it means to be straight strengths-based. So I just want to give you a second to process the question. There's people behind me, and it's so weird that I'm talking to you and you're back there. But anyways, what words come to mind when you think about the strengths-based approach? So if you could just write down a few. What are those initial words that come to your mind when you think about the strengths-based approach? And then we'd just like to hear those verbally when you have a few thoughts. We'll give you a minute. I won't do that. No. Thanks. I got it yesterday. How we doing? Thumbs up? Good? All right. Who would like to share? What are some words that come to your mind when you think about approaching things in a strengths-based manner?
Core behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Resilient, flexible. Information seeking.
Okay. Any other thoughts?
Things you're good at or mastery?
Mm-hmm. Any others? Okay.
And then we dance. So in early childhood, we do a lot of work with families. And when we consider the families that we are working with, we do try to find a strengths-based approach when we're working with families. I'm going to ask you to take a moment to look at the image on the screen. I want you to consider that this is just a snapshot of someone's reality. So we all have our own ideas, our own perceptions of how we prefer to keep our home. We are going to choose to view this image with respect. And what I want you to do is I want you to take about 30 seconds just to look at the image, think on your own about what strengths you see in this picture. After the end of that 30 seconds, I'm going to invite you to pair up. You can go in partners or triads, however you're comfortable, and talk to each other about what strengths you see. And then I'll give you about a minute and a half, and then we'll come back and share. Okay, I'll ask you to come back. I heard lots of great conversation. I would love it if you could share out a few of the strengths that you saw. You guys want to start over there? Yeah.
So some of the things that we said was it looks like the boy is very happy to see his father, and like the kids are, at least they're by their parents, so they're like spending time with them. There's like pictures of them on the cabinet, so they're like connected as a family, it looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. What else?
We saw a few.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, a lot of families suffer from food insecurities, and this family mm-hmm. has, it appears, you know, ample food and fruits and vegetables as well. Mm-hmm.
We saw that they were clothed and hopefully electricity there if they're watching TV mm-hmm. or something.
Yeah. Any anything else before I pass it on to Kelly.
They have a work ethic. Dad's coming home from work.
Yeah.
And there are activities besides, well, you say books and puzzles.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. You guys have wonderful observation skills.
Some other ones I missed a few times watching, like there's some post-its on the fridge. So maybe there's some appointments, some things to look forward to, some calendar of activities. So do you want to switch a slide, Gloria? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that is really important.
Mm-hmm. So really the strengths-based approach is focusing in on all the positive attributes of a person and or a group, that group being that family we just looked at, rather than looking at the negative. And for whatever reason, our minds sometimes will go there first. So doing the strengths-based approach is really retraining ourselves to think differently about what we're seeing and using those strengths that existed as they did in that photo, such as a parent working, access to food, to take that family to the next level. And there are really 9 core principles that we look at when we think about the strengths-based approach, and the first one being that every person and individual possesses potential, strength, and capability. Regardless of your background or what you have experienced in life, everyone has a strength, and we need to honor that and acknowledge that for the family as they come to us to serve them. Just like with kids, we say this to parents when you're working with little ones, what gets your attention becomes the focus of what we look at. And so what receives attention becomes what we strive for. So if we go into that home and we're only to talk about organization, picking safety things up, etc., we would be coming in more of that deficit lens. We're coming in and saying, I am so glad you guys got to go to the grocery store together today. How was that experience for you? We're honoring that family bond, that experience, and allowing them to really talk about and grow and develop that strength. Like, oh, this lady recognized that. I want to do that more. Families are very similar in the way they respond to feedback, just as we want our students to do. We need to be careful with our words, because our words create our reality, especially for our families. So we need to be mindful about the way we ask questions. Just like we want teachers to do the same with students, we need to do the same with families. How are we providing them with open-ended questions that give them the opportunity to tell their story? We need to accept that change, life, and our world are ever evolving. Every day we go into a new home, to a home, it might not look or be the same circumstances that existed the week prior. So we need to be prepared for that and holding some of those strengths for the family. And just that each person is their own storyteller. And their story in life is a picture of where they are now and where we can work with them to empower them to keep moving forward. And that's something really important to acknowledge. Because we do that, we can then build upon those strengths and take them to wherever their next hopes and dreams would be. But capacity building is the same for families, again, as it is for students. We have to help families through whatever their next want might be or their goal might be to grow those skills to get to that level. So it's all about collaboration, being adaptive, and valuing that each person brings unique individual differences to the table. So those are really the 9 core principles that are laid out when you look at a strengths-based approach. The protective factors that follow, these are the 6 things that we hope parents get from the opportunity to be supported in a strengths-based way. That first one being, as you mentioned earlier, parental resilience. This is a hard job, parenting. No manual, nothing for us to go by other than what's been done with us in the past or done to us. So how do we gain that resilience to keep moving forward when things get hard? Social connections. Many of our families experience isolation, and they're their only group is those people in the home. So by having these parent educators and parent events and opportunities, we build social connections. Parents meet other parents that they may have never had the opportunity to do before. A lot of us have gone to college for a long time to learn about parenting and child development. And by doing these home visits, we are able to help families learn about child development. Some families don't know that four-year-olds should be speaking. And we see that all the time. So by being present and available, we can let them know that one-year-old should be starting to say some words. And having all these parent educators allows us to get to as many people as we can. Concrete supports in times of need. Because we have built the relationship on strength, and because parents know we value them, they will then come to us when there's something they really need, and we want that. You don't want anyone to be out on their own when they're struggling. Again, the parallel between the parents of honoring their value and strength, we want that to parallel from the parent to the child. Are we giving the social competence for the child and their social emotional well-being too? And lastly is just that healthy parent-child relationship. We want situations where we're growing and developing because we have allowed the parents to feel valued in the strengths-based way. So those are the protective factors that connect back to those.
So our parent educators really can provide a circle of support for our families. Just take a moment and think to yourself, without even knowing what we might look at right now, when you think of circle of support, what comes to your mind? Just say. I'm sorry, say that again. Family? Very good point. What else comes to your mind when you think of circle of support? Friends,
co-workers,
neighbors. Think of it too, it's just like it sounds, those people around you that you can count on. Now, I want you to think about the past 2 years, what some of our parents' circles of support looked like. It probably was non-existent for many. And for even people like me, an educated person, who would sometimes feel pretty down because I wasn't able to see my circle of support as much as I wanted to. So it's really difficult on families. Maybe they don't have families here. Maybe their family is in Mexico. Maybe their family's in Honduras. Maybe their families in Russia, we don't know. We have so many people from different areas. It's really hard for them to have a circle of support. This is a very quick video speaking about circles of support and why they're so necessary.
My first year as a mother was the most isolating time in my life. I felt completely disconnected. I didn't even want a second child if I had to relive that year again. We like to say or think that new parents are happy after their first baby. The reality is that many are not. In a recent study, over 70% of new parents reported being less happy in the first 2 years. The average new parent experienced a severe drop in happiness, a drop greater than that from divorce or the death of a partner. The more unhappy parents tended to stop having children. We say it takes a village to raise a child. But modern parents don't live in villages. Villages used to be a natural way for us to learn from and receive help from our extended families and the surrounding communities. Now, parents often dive alone into the most important life-changing role they may ever have, with little preparation and support. What today's parents need are modern villages. In my second pregnancy, I created a modern village. Mothering two children felt so natural and positive. I wanted to have a third baby.
Thank you. We had that linked in the presentation and it didn't connect to YouTube. Just that one. Sorry about that.
So that's where we come in. We've become the modern village, really. And when we think about the strengths base, when we think about her words, which is so true. People say that phrase, but what does that actually mean if I'm isolated into my own space? So as we talk about strengths, it's also important that we're not saying we never talk about the things that families need to do as a not yet skill, some of those lesser strengths. And these are the things we seek to support them with through those circles of support. And so three ways we do that, the three real core components of a visit are by our facilitating, coming alongside and modeling and or supporting a skill, partnering, what is the next thing you want to work on as a family or what do you hope for your child to do next, and then reflecting with them along the way. Oh, you talked about wanting to take them to a library program. How did that go for you? Were you able to get the taxi service? So we have to become that partnership, that village, as she talked about, really to help build up those lesser strengths, because all the parents love their children. They just might not have the way to get to where they want to go. And so that's where the parent educators and the opportunities that we have with families are so critical. So the Parents as Teachers program, just for a really high-level view, is a prenatal to the day they turn three intensive home visiting program. The parent educators in that team will carry 12 to 15 families apiece, and they go into the home with each of those families two times a month, an hour each. So they spend 2 hours a month with each family. It's a very intense curriculum, hundreds of hours of training to deliver those home visits. And tons of screenings looking at not only child development, but family depression, intimate partner violence, other things like that that might be happening for the family that we need to be aware of to support. So that is a really intensive model of home visiting, and the Parents as Teachers is the curriculum that we have chosen in our district to utilize. There are others, but this one is one of the more comprehensive looks. Prenatally, too, they go home. They go in and meet with a mom who is pregnant 2 hours a month, and talk to them all the way through until they get to delivery, and then we start working with the mom and the baby.
How does that family get hooked up with the district before they even have a kid?
We just have to find them.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't want to say partnerships, but I mean just with the doctors and the hospitals in the area.
We've developed a partnership with Rush, so as unfortunately, it's when the baby is born, right? We're getting connection. We need to figure that out. Where are those places we can go to find moms who are expecting? There are a lot of prenatal home visiting programs in the Aurora community, but some will only see the parent while they're pregnant. Then they can't see them anymore. So different grant funding supports different opportunities. We can see them prenatal 2-3. There is coordinated intake in the West Aurora community, so we do get referrals that way. But prenatal is a monitoring piece that the state looks at, and they want us to keep growing that. And we're at about 9% this year, which was pretty good.
And then if you think about moving on to a continuum, you come to the PFA program, which is our early learning program over here on Galena. And we have parent educators that work with families. And I wouldn't call it, I wouldn't say it's not intense, because it can be, but it doesn't follow an intense curriculum like a PAT. But our parent educators can be involved in some pretty intense and difficult conversations depending on the story of our families. Sometimes the visits are just a few times, and they're able to help a family through a crisis. Or like this year, I'm thinking of Mohammed, who came to us. Mohammed was adopted by a family. He's from Morocco. And from the day he was born until he was about 18 months old, Mohammed wasn't allowed out of his crib in Morocco. So he had very low skills, very low body tone. It was really a heartbreaking story. And then he landed on our steps at 3 years old. And mom and dad, who loved Mohammed and loves Mohammed very much, really needed some support, because Mohammed now was wild and free and learning how to run and really had no skills and no verbal abilities. And so our parent educator, along with mom and dad, along with our psychologist, and along with our social worker, kind of just formed this modern village and did several intensive home visits with mom and dad and Mohammed at home and at school. And Mohammed, I cannot believe the child that came to us and the child that is actually going on to full day pre-K, that he's ready for that. Now, he's going to be a handful, Beth, because Mohammed loves life, and he learned that, you know, being here in the United States with loving families. But that's what we were able to provide for that family. It really depends on the family and the children that come to our doorsteps at the ELA.
And I get the easy job of saying ditto. Not exactly, though, because in our Preschool for All expansion program, we do have preschool classrooms in 6 of the 10 elementary buildings. We have expanded our parent educators, so we now have parent educators in all 10 elementary buildings and at Hopewell who are working with families in pre-K and kindergarten. So we've been able to, with the ESSER funds, we've been able to expand that role so that our parent educators are building relationships with children in their buildings, starting with preschool and continuing on into kindergarten. So they are, again, it's not the same as working in a prenatal to 3 program where they're meeting with families twice a month, but it, depending on the family, some meetings are weekly, some meetings they meet with a family once or twice a year, and that's all they need. But they're also able to provide that connection from home to school to help families learn the value of being part of their children's education as they transition into kindergarten, and knowing that the transition from preschool to kindergarten is a big one for kids and their parents. So for them to be there, to be able to be part of that transition is a really big opportunity for us.
How many parent educators do we have?
Well, look at that.
That's the next slide.
Good. You're talking about this over here.
So we've really, really grown. This is my, I think my 11th year of as principal at the Todd ELA. I love to say Todd once in a while. Takes me back. And we actually started with, in our PAT, which is the intensive program Kelly was talking about, with 2 parent educators.
We've grown 30.
Oh,
well, they're at
15 each?
What I don't know what 2 were doing back in the day, but yeah, our 10 parent educators, one of them is the lead, so she helps to oversee a lot of different things. We're about 121 families.
Wow.
Right there. That's awesome. Yeah, I don't know what 2 people were doing.
Two people were doing over 30, which was not. It's not even allowed anymore. No, no. And it was unrealistic, and it was what it was back then, and thank goodness it's changed. So, because it really wasn't providing the quality that we really wanted it to provide. And PFA was what they called a parent coordinator and a paraprofessional, and now we have three parent educators at our early learning academy working with families. So that's a huge jump. When I believe the grant, when I came onto it in 2011, had 270 spots, I would have to look, and there's 400 PFA spots now, and then 200 full day spots now. So you can imagine why we would need to increase that, and our families' difficulties have also, you know, the challenges have become a little bit greater since then. And then PFAE, one parent educator in 2015, Beth, right? And now up to six, encompassing pre-K and kindergarten. So we can reach out to so many more families and so many environments in elementary and pre-K. It's really, when I see this on paper, I can't believe this. I really can't. I can't believe I'm not more exhausted than I am. I think I might be taking your slide, Beth. So this is just a few, like I don't think we listed all of them. This is just a few resources for our circle of support for families. And when we list these, it's not like we're giving them maybe, well, sometimes we give them a handout, but like a flyer, but many times we have our parent educators going to the VNA with families, meeting them there. Helping them immigration status in Chicago.
Yeah, I had a parent educator, a family was from Honduras here and on asylum. They could not get their paperwork. She beat down the doors of the consulate. The mother was on the news, and she ended up getting her documentation. But without her to call, she had no way to access any of her documents. So it's a great deal more than some of this list, but mm-hmm. they're taking and holding that space for them in whatever way they need it.
And I think the mom groups are so important, because you read mom group, it's so much more than that. And it's a place where our moms and dads can come and they can start their village. And they can start finding people that they can, oh, that's my friend. I can talk, you know, I have a friend that's in the community that I can go to and I can connect with, and I just don't feel so alone anymore. And those connections are so powerful.
Might be a good referral source then for you guys, as they have their friends that, oh, yeah, this lady here is pregnant now and starts
predominantly
all over again.
For prenatal to three, that yeah. I would say is 60% of our referrals are someone going and dragging their neighbors and
yeah.
saying, you need to be in this program too.
Yep.
Yeah. So what else are you curious about after we presented and shared with you? What else is still, what thoughts might you have or what's coming up for you?
Well, I see the massive amount of growth that you've been able to have. If you were to, I know this is sort of abstract, but if you were to think of even where you're at now, what percentage of the people are we reaching in our community?
Not enough, probably. We got last a Spark report about how many,
like
birth to three, there's thousands. 10 to 12,000, I think the number was, of 0 to 5-year-olds in the West Aurora community, and we're getting closer to 1,000. We're getting closer when we think about our 5 self-contained classrooms and all of what we're doing prenatal. So we're 10% of the way there.
And we're one of the bigger programs in the community. And the challenge that we've always had and continue to have, either whether it's PFA or a PFA expansion, when our friends in elected positions throughout the state talk about the millions that are being committed to early childhood, in many cases we can't afford to take the money because of all the other requirements that comes along with. And so our challenge in working with Spark, with Trish Rooney, which is Strong, Prepared, and Ready for Kindergarten through the Fox Valley United Way, is to think differently about how we offer these opportunities to the other thousands that we're not able to attend to at this moment, but to think about some of the storefront shops, the mom and pop household offerings, and how do we help support them and provide some continuity as they start to migrate towards our 3- and 4-year-old programs here. But that's a challenge that we have been, since we've kind of maxed at our 600, you can see the massive amount of support it takes just for our 600. Think if we added 400 more. Not only is there space, but then there's the cost. It's hard to reckon with. So it's it takes more than just a certified staff member and a paraprofessional, speech paths and social workers and psychs, parents, educators. All of those pieces have to come into play. And so that's our challenge of how do we broaden our impact, but think differently about doing so. Sorry about
that. Yeah, I know we've talked in the past because a lot of it's on grants and the writing of different grants
all
and then following them. Is there any conversation of instead of doing this through grants but changing our funding so now instead of it being kindergarten, it's backing up and going further back so then it's just part of our general funding?
There's actually 38 different pathways to access dollar right now, and the problem is there's 38 different pathways. And so what we're trying to do is consolidate all of those efforts at the state level so that there's a singular approach. And we know that one size doesn't fit all, but it shouldn't be so difficult. It shouldn't take a PhD in grantology to be able to access these dollars and to make sense of this when our need is right now. It's very immediate. Mm-hmm. We don't have time to waste on all this other stuff. It's out there, but it's almost inaccessible.
Well, the thing that gets me is always the restrictions they put on things. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, we'll give you this, but here's the 20 other things you got to do to get this money.
Correct.
Yeah. And a lot of them don't make any sense.
Very compliance-based.
Yes. You're right.
It's very frustrating.
Mm-hmm. I know you guys are reaching out to families even before pre-K, but of our kids coming into kindergarten, how many have actually gone through pre-K programs? Not just ours, but, I mean, because New England closed. Wesley's closing after 70 years. I mean, we're losing pre-K programs in our community. Mm-hmm. Do we know? Because I assume that our kindergartners that have gone through pre-K programs are doing better than ours that have not.
I'm sure with those students that have been in district to district, we could probably get that data. I don't know on registration, does it ask if you've been to pre-K? I don't know if that's something we collect, but it certainly would be intriguing.
I think at a presentation done a while ago, I think we were roughly between 75% and 80% of our kindergartner kids came out of our pre-K programs. I think the challenge, I think the noticeable difference, it's hard to measure because there isn't really a good assessment to say how are they doing, but I think that there is a noticeable positive difference of kids that have gone through some type of a pre-K program that are now entering into our K-12 experience. Fair statement?
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's just there's not an assessment to say in certain skill sets the observation says they're doing better. It just there's a noticeable difference that they're more they right. acclimate better into those group settings.
Yeah.
I'll shut up now.
There's definitely work when we think about the kids' assessment at kindergarten. We use the DRDP at early childhood. That actually goes into kids as well. We don't have right now any data around that. This is just really trying to take a look at as we go into next year. How do we communicate with one another? How do we think about those more as a continuum? You heard about the play-based pieces a couple of weeks ago around early childhood. Really goes all the
I'm glad to see that we're using some of the ESSER dollars to really help this, especially given the last 2 years. I'm sure that was probably a pretty significant step back for a lot of the work you were doing.
Yeah, it was challenging, but they figured it out in that time, and our families did too. And so we're glad to be back in their house, for sure.
Yeah, because there's many of the BRTA 3 programs are not even visiting in homes yet.
Wow.
That Kelly goes to like forums and meetings with. They're still working out of their homes. I don't understand it. We have been back in homes for August. So, I mean, that's where you're going to make the most impact.
Yeah, it was very fun to watch, personally. They did a lovely job. I was absolutely remarkable what they figured out to do. It was remarkable. The videos were excellent, and they made the impact. And our family showed up to those Zoom visits because that support is huge, and they didn't want to lose that. So.
Mm-hmm. Other questions, board members?
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you
so
much. Ladies.
Thank you. Now we have 4.2 and 4.3, two very different topics, but both of them are initial steps. The first one Orion's going to talk about is our annual conversation, a resolution for the depository, and the second one is a new topic. Ryan?
Good evening. Speaking of compliance, so this is our annual tradition. It's our designated depository resolution that we have to sign, and it basically just ensures that our assets don't make up too large of a portion of the bank's assets that we're in. We use Old Second for a majority of our funds and Bloom Township for the other piece, and we certainly don't have to worry about that. So we'll ask for your approval at the next meeting for that. And typically, in past years, we would have a prevailing wage resolution for you to approve. The law has changed, so we still have to pay prevailing wages for all of our projects, but we don't have to pass the resolution, so that's why you're not seeing that piece. I'm happy to answer any questions.
It's just assumed now or something? Or
I'm sorry?
It's just assumed now that since we don't have to pass a...
We're still required to pay prevailing wage. We just don't have to pass the resolution.
Okay.
I don't know the impetus behind that, to tell you the truth. Okay, so we'll ask for your approval at the next meeting for that. The next one, so as part of our budgeting process every year, ISB looks at the budget that we submit to them, and they look at a specific grouping of accounts to determine our administrative expenses. Some examples of this are the Office of the Superintendent, actually support for the Preschool for All and BRTA 3 grants, some but not all of the finance department expenses, and they look at the current year budget, and that can only increase by up to 5% from the prior year actuals. So basically limiting the increase of our administrative expenses by 5%, which in theory makes sense. Couple problems with this is, again, we're doing this in July and August, and we don't have our actuals finalized until September or October, so that number's changing. And most of our significant grant budgets haven't been approved yet. Those don't get approved until September or October as well. So we kind of have two moving targets. We kind of have to estimate to give our best guess of where that's going to fall. So we received a letter last month saying that we were over this 5% threshold.
This would have been estimated last year?
Right, so our fiscal 22 budget was over 5% what our 21 actuals were. In looking, and we just got this last month, so it's been several months, which makes that difficult too. But looking back, the reason that we were over the 5% was actually not to pick on the Preschool for All folks, but the initial budget had $130,000 increase, which put us over that 5%, that had us at 14%. Now, subsequently, that piece went back down, so we would have been under it, but it was just that snapshot in time that they were looking at. So to get in compliance, we have to do one of two things. One is amend the fiscal 22 budget, which follows the same process before with, you know, 30 days posting and all that, that fun. Or because we're in the bottom 25% of administrative salaries per pupil in the state, they allow us to have a limitation, or I'm sorry, a waiver of that limitation, which requires a public hearing and a resolution. So we would ask to start the next meeting with this public hearing and then ask for your approval of the resolution at that time.
Of the waiver.
I'm sorry?
For the waiver.
Right, right.
Is this for once a year you would have to do this?
Well,
we
shouldn't have to do it again.
Okay.
It was just kind of the one snapshot in time that they looked at. We were out of compliance according to them. I will just add, you know, we work really hard to make sure our administrative expenses are in line with our programs and offerings for our students. It's something that we look at every year.
Yeah, so you said we're the bottom 25% of administrative expenses in the state of Illinois?
Per pupil, yes.
Per pupil across the state,
right.
Regardless of region or size of
right,
region.
Right.
So we keep our costs down significantly.
Right.
And to differentiate, too, that's not necessarily an administrator cost.
Right.
It's administrative services being rendered.
Yeah. And actually, for their grant, it was three office professionals. So it's not necessarily, and again, it's these are very nebulous terms. So the direction for business services is included in this calculation, but fiscal services isn't. So if you define those, the difference for me, I'm open to hear it. But so they're very nebulous term, and I understand the thought behind it. But like I said, we work hard, and actually, if we weren't in the lowest 25%, we would have to go through and amend the budget. So.
So we're looking to start our June 20 meeting with a hearing to go through that process for that waiver?
Right, yes, sir.
Other questions for Ryan on this?
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, now we move to our students' rights and responsibilities. Can I ask Marty Nearing? Thank you.
Short, sorry. Good evening. As you know, that it's the district's responsibility to update the student policies and rights and responsibilities each year in accordance with new laws and regulations that have gone into place. This year, we have a few required changes that need to be formally communicated to our families. So I'll go through those with you this evening, and then Dr. McCall is going to talk with you in her equity update regarding how we're going to handle rights and responsibilities and viewing that through an equity lens moving forward. So the first three changes that I will talk with you about tonight are in accordance with Public Act 102-157, which relates to attendance and truancy. The first is that we need to make formal notice to families that mental health and pregnancy and postpartum related absences are to be considered excused. This is something that we have already been doing and will continue to do, but we need to notify parents of that. The second is that we need to provide attendance and truancy policy notification to our families on a yearly basis. And so we will do that through our rights and responsibilities document and reference board policy 7070. And then the third change for attendance and truancy that we will post in our rights and responsibilities states that we will take all reasonable diagnostic measures to identify the cause of student absence. And we will do that through interviews with relevant persons, parent and student meetings, home visits, etc. Again, these are some things that we already do, but it will provide notice to our families and continued accountability for us. The next update references Public Act 102-413, which references the anaphylactic policy. This requires us to notify parents that we do have an anaphylactic policy and who they can go to if they have any questions regarding that.
So in the rights and responsibilities, we will reference Public Act 7270, which falls under the administration of medication to students. And we will reference that we have the anaphylactic policy and that parents can contact their building principal or the certified school nurse if they have any questions. We do work with an allergist who does provide the district with an undesignated epinephrine so that we have that if there's ever an emergency. And then the last one that I will talk about before passing it off to Jen Herman for special education references Public Act 102-416 and the Beyond Charity Law, which references the increase of student and childhood and teen suicide, which has unfortunately increased across the state and the country. We were required to print on the back of student IDs and in the student rights and responsibilities document the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline number and the crisis text line number. We have done that. We've also provided local information from the Suicide Prevention Services Center in Batavia so that people have access to a local service. And we are the only school district, and I'm proud to say this, in Kane County, who has subscribed to the Safe to Help hotline that Illinois has instituted this past school year. This gives kids and parents the ability to have 24/7 access if they need to get connected with someone, and then that connection will then flow back to the school district so that we can put resources in place. And that Safe to Help Illinois was built off a very successful program coming out of the state of Colorado. And then Jen, do you want to talk about special education?
Can I ask you about the epinephrine?
Yeah.
So does every building have an EpiPen? Is this what we're talking
they
about?
They sure do, yes. They have adult doses and the junior doses.
And we've been doing that for a while, haven't we?
We have, yes. That's we what I absolutely thought. Have. Yeah, we're ahead of the game on that, yes.
Yeah. But now it's just official because we got to put it in the handbook.
Right.
The
everything that we have to update today is just about official notice.
Yeah.
Good evening. Do we maybe have a next slide, I think, with Public Act 102?
It's at the
there
bottom.
There we go. The very bottom one is what I'll be speaking toward this evening. Public Act 102-172, which was effective on July 28th, 2021, but we have been implementing it all school year, and so today we want to just update our Rights and Responsibilities Handbook to include this act. The Act specifically states that students with a disability will be eligible to receive special education and related services through the end of the school year in which they turn 22 years old. So no longer will services just cease them the moment or the day that the student does turn 22 if they're in the middle of a program. Prior to this act, we would have students in a program, specifically a transition program. They would turn 22, it could be in September, October, it could be March, but then their services wouldn't continue. This act, which has now been implemented for almost a year, is a wonderful thing, and it provides the opportunity for students to finish the school year.
Jen, how many students does this impact?
So this past school year of implementing the Public Act, there were 8 students during the school year that turned 22, and 5 of those students were in our transition program at Hopewell, and they all continued and graduated at the end of this school year. And there were 3 from our transition program in the Black Hawk campus. 2 finished the school year, and 1 had met his goals and had transitioned on to the workforce. Yeah, next year we're looking forward to this occurring again, and we are slated right now for 5 students to have the opportunity to potentially continue. And the way we determine that is really by looking at their individual goals and where they are in their particular program. Can I answer any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, ladies. 4.5, our information section, Dr. McCall is going to provide an update, a little bit of where we've been in terms of our equity process, where we are right now, and some next steps. So, Dr. McCall.
Thank you. Before I get into the equity update, I just wanted to follow up with what Mrs. Nearing was saying regarding our student rights and responsibilities. So one of the things that I've been working on with our Student Equity Advisory Council, our Community Equity Advisory Council, as well as our District Equity Leadership Team, is to really take a look at our rights and responsibilities and to think about what is it that we need to add or remove, or what do we need to do as we're looking at our rights and responsibilities with an equity lens. So in some cases, it's nothing. In some cases, maybe we might need to rethink some of the language. So as we continue to have those updates, we'll bring those to you throughout the school year. And now to move into our equity update. So what I'd like to do is to start coming before you on a more regular basis to provide you with kind of some of the work with what we're doing, so that you become familiar with all the different things that we're doing as we continue on along. I'll continue along our equity journey. So I'm going to start with our equity audit summary report, which I think was the last time that I was before you, just to kind of share with you where we are. So since the last time we talked, I've been out to all 16 buildings and shared the equity audit summary report. And the responses from the buildings have really varied. The responses vary from people being, staff members being super supportive, really excited about the work and the direction that we're heading. In some instances, there was just no response. There was silence. And in some instances, some staff members were upset or offended because they felt as if the report was speaking directly to them. So I think that's a good thing that we've had 16 different responses, because if I had the same response in every single building, I might be a little concerned. So that's the good news. The other thing that's happened with the equity audit summary report is that we have started drafting our equity action plan, which we are going to align with our district improvement plan. So as you know, Dr. Raby and his team, they've done an awful lot of work with challenging learning. We want to make sure that our equity action plan aligns with that same language and that same format and the same style that our staff has become accustomed to. So rather than having the equity plan over here and then the challenging learning, the district improvement plan over on the other side, we want to make sure that they flow together. So just to kind of remind you of what our equity action plan, what is the purpose of this plan? So as you know, we did the report to find out the areas where we're strong and the areas where we can use some improvement. So the equity action plan is actually putting the rubber to the road. So it's informing our future decisions related to five different strands, and those strands are family and community as agency, professional learning, student voice, climate and culture, systems and teaching and learning. And then the other function of our equity action plan is to also develop some type of a progress monitoring framework so that we can check to see if we're actually doing and saying the things that we said that we're going to do. So rather than, I think you heard me mention before, that we don't want a glossy brochure or a binder that's put up on the shelf that says, hey, hooray, we did this. This is something that should be a living and breathing document. So as you look at our equity action plan team, which stay tuned, there's a very special invitation coming at the end, but our equity action plan team has met twice already. And so tomorrow we'll be meeting again, and what we're going to be doing, or what we have done, we've completed two work days. So far we have identified what our priorities should be for the 22-23 school year, as well as created baseline statements, which you're probably familiar with from our district improvement plan, for each of those strands. And those strands, as I mentioned, are right there, the family and community as agency, professional learning, student voice, climate and culture, and teaching and learning. So tomorrow what our hope is to try and refine those a little bit more and to narrow the focus, because as you can imagine, with five different strands, there's a lot of different ideas and thoughts, and you can't do everything well the first time around. So we want to kind of narrow our focus so we can figure out where we're going with our first step on the journey. So what I'd like to do is to share with you some updates in terms of things that have happened since the last time that we've met within each of these strands. So I'm going to start first with our student voice, climate, and culture, and with our district equity leadership team, our SEAC, our Student Equity Advisory Council, as well as our Community Equity Advisory Council. We had what was really exciting, which is our Equity Cafe. So it was our final meeting of all three teams coming together. The goal was to bring the teams together, not only just to share the work that they've been doing and to see all the commonalities in terms of what's being discussed over here is also being discussed over here. And, oh, look, we're doing some of the same things, but you're doing it in the community with parents. I'm doing it in the district with staff members, and our students are doing the same thing within the building. So it was a great opportunity. We also had some community guests. A thank you to our board members who were able to attend that meeting. It was really a very uplifting and very positive night. In addition to our board members and our staff who were able to attend, we also had some special guests in attendance. We had Clayton Muhammad and Michelle Williams from the city of Aurora that came and joined us. And we also had Keith Wise from Aurora University. He's their equity person over there. So moving forward in 22-23, the goal is to continue to have these equity cafes where we can have all teams come together, we can have members of the community, and you're certainly welcome to come out and join us. So I'll be sure to give you the calendar for that. In terms of our systems update, some things that have been going on. We continue to work towards diversifying our staff. As you know, our goal is to eventually have our staff to be representative of what our student demographic looks like. So you've probably heard about the Golden Apple Foundation, the partnership that we have established. And so we've hosted some workshops, and Dr. Smith and Mrs. Beatis, they've been super helpful in terms of helping facilitate some of those conversations with our partner. In terms of the workshops, the meet and greets, our principals have been on board with using the portfolio, the book that we get from Apple that has all their candidates, so they can go through there to see if there are anybody they want to hire. Excuse me. We're also going to be hosting some summer scholars who will be coming in to fulfill some of their summer hours. So we're really starting to get some good traction. So I think we have, is it two candidates that we've hired so far through our Golden Apple scholars? So we're hoping to continue to increase that number. And then also we have established a partnership with the National Center for Teacher Residency. It's a grant that I, along with Dr. Aubrey Southall from Aurora University, we wrote. And if I remember correctly, we are the only district within this region, within the state of Illinois, that received the grant. So we have a partnership with them. We've identified some staff members at the high school who will be hosting teachers in the fall. But what's happening as soon as next week, we're going to be doing some of the professional learning opportunities with the staff member. So the difference between the NCTR teacher residency program and what a typical student teaching opportunity would be is that we are giving them that equity foundation in terms of preparing our teachers with that knowledge, as well as the student teachers, the residents, so that when they hopefully will come work in our district, assuming everything goes well and works out, that they come in with a different set of eyes and ready to support our students in a way that teachers who have gone through typical student teaching programs have not. So that's been going well. And moving,
those student teachers come from
Aurora University. Yes, so that's the stipulation, is that the grant is a partnership where Aurora, they actually write it and agree with the district, and we've been working together back and forth. So there are some other perks, books and backpacks and iPads and things like that, that the students as well as the staff members receive as part of that grant, which makes it also very appealing to those that want to apply for it. But we actually had a good number of students. I think we were up to, I think it was right around 10 or 11 students from Aurora who have joined and are interested in being a part of the program. So that's great.
Do you think that might expand then to elementary and middle school?
I'm sorry?
Do you think it might expand to elementary and middle school? Is it just secondary student teachers?
So that would be something that would be up to the state of Illinois as well as the Center for Teacher Residency. So right now the way that they have it written is that it's for secondary.
Gotcha.
My assumption is that that's where they see the greatest shortage, but I would agree with you that we could definitely use some of that or I'd like to see them extend the guidelines to go down to middle school and elementary, especially pre-KK.
Great.
Makes sense.
Maybe they're just starting.
And then also along the systems piece, we have our equity journey continuum, which is a new piece coming out of the state of Illinois. So the equity journey continue, I think I've included some updates as I've been going through the training with the state of Illinois. It's simply an informational tool to help districts view their data through an equity lens. It identifies gaps within student achievement, opportunities, and supports by analyzing the data that ISBE already collects. So they're taking all of our data and they're just running it through a different filter. At the end, or what will happen in October when we receive our school report card, each district will be placed on an equity continuum with a step from step one, meaning that there are large gaps, to step four, meaning there are minimal gaps. And so this will be something, it'll be a new designation that will show up on our report card. We're kind of challenged in the area in that the information that we're getting from ISBE is helpful in the sense it tells us information, but we're still trying to get more information about what is next. So what does this mean? So what is it there for? So you've told us this, so therefore, what does that mean? So it seems that so far the information that we have from our equity audit is a little bit more detailed, but we'll continue to keep asking questions and I'll keep you updated as we get that information. So the next update comes with our family and community as agency. So this year, what I thought would be beneficial for the district is to take a different approach to our parent leadership series, because as you know, we host programs, we get great speakers, it's always a good event, but the turnout sometimes is not what we would hope that it, what we think it should be considering a district our size. So the approach that we're going to be taking this year is that it's an all-in approach. So it's not just me just sending out information to all of our families. It's something where our district equity leadership team, our community equity advisory council, as well as our community partners, we're all responsible. We're all in to get our events, you know, packed, you know, to get everybody out and to tell everybody about it. So we have some speakers confirmed, and I'll also be getting those dates to you. But we're going to be hosting speakers as well as hosting the Equity Cafe. And my hope is that by having community partners, so for example, we've already had, I think it's three partners from the community who signed on to co-sponsor our speaker, our first speaker coming up in at the end of September, October, 1st of October. So by having everybody be all in, then everyone is responsible, and it's not just hoping that they pick up the call or they pay attention to the email, so that's exciting. And then finally, the special invitation that's coming at the end, excuse me, is that you're all cordially invited to join us. We have, I mentioned earlier, we have an equity action plan team meeting tomorrow. I realize it's short notice, but I wanted to make sure that everybody got the same invitation. So if you happen to be free tomorrow from 11 to 4 p.m., we would love to have you join us. You can come and you can hear some of the things that we're talking about, that we're planning, and as we get ready to move forward with the next step of our equity action plan. If you can't come tomorrow, you're certainly welcome to join us for other meetings, but I wanted you to know you're always welcome to come and join us. We'll be over at Washington in room 152. And that takes care of our equity audit update. Can I answer any questions for you? Anything lingering in the back of your mind? All right, thank you.
Thanks,
Dr. McCall. And with that, Mr. Kearns, I turn it back to you for an action item.
Excellent. So we need a motion for action item 5.1.
Second.
It has been moved and seconded. Are there any further questions or comments? Hearing none, Mrs. Secretary, please call the roll.
Mr. Lathan?
Aye.
Mrs. Dykstra?
Aye.
Mr. Gonzalez?
Aye.
Mrs. Opperston?
Aye.
Mr. St. Jules?
Yes.
Mrs. Stones?
Aye.
Mr. Kearns?
Aye. The motion passes. We now come to our public comment section time. Since we don't have any public comment, we'll turn it over to the superintendent for his comments.
Thank you, sir. I have two comments. One, I want to extend a note of gratitude to our two student board members who are here. School is out, and here they are, Mr. Andrew Wong and Ms. Crystal Gutierrez. Thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it. We don't take that for granted, so you being here is very nice. We do appreciate that effort. The other thing I wanted to mention is that I will apologize for the inconvenience. Good Lord willing, the creek doesn't rise, and all of the stars align, potentially, possibly, a definite maybe, we may have our parking lot back on Wednesday, this Wednesday, not next Wednesday, not a month from Wednesday, but potentially this coming Wednesday. I know it's been arduous, especially for our folks here in this building, folks coming to our building, but hopefully things will get resolved by sometime Wednesday. So thank you for bearing with us. And that's all that I have.
Thank you, sir. I'd like to turn it over to our student board members now, Mr. Wong and Ms. Gutierrez.
So I just wanted to highlight some of the cool things that are going on, especially in our arts. So the choir is in Nashville right now. They're enjoying their trip for down in Tennessee, and they also are going to go perform in the Cougars game for the national anthem. So that's some cool stuff going on in the arts, and as well as that, our marching band has also just performed at the Memorial Day Parade, which was awesome.
I want to congratulate the varsity softball team for winning regionals and sectionals. I am eager to find out the results of tomorrow's game against Edwardville at 4:30. Hopefully the girls will bring in another win.
Got rain now. Great. Thank you very much. I'd like to turn it over to our board members for their comment.
Couple things. One, I don't think we've been here since graduation. Graduation was wonderful. It's an honor and a privilege to be able to shake kids' hands that have, gone through our district. Some of them since kindergarten, and this year was no exception to that. It was just a lot of fun, and it's a great thing to see. As far as the marching band marching and the Memorial Day Parade, I had the privilege of walking in front of them. So whenever people were waving and smiling at me, they were actually waving and smiling at the marching band directly behind me. So that worked out well for me. And then my last thing, congratulations to girls softball. It's an awesome victory. And now we get to take on Edwardsville, who we all know is the scourge of girls Illinois softball. So I really hope that we can get that done tomorrow. So good luck.
There's a rumor that there was a fat head in front of the marching band during a parade of a certain board member. Just a rumor. Again, have a wonderful summer, everyone. We'll still be here. We'll still be working hard. And thank you for the reports.
Best of luck tomorrow, Mr. Gorman, Coach Gorman. And was that the creek or the creek that wasn't going to rise?
Yeah, all the above.
I have nothing this evening, Mr. Kearns.
Oh, nothing. Well,
it is June 6th of 2022, and
we'll move on real quickly.
The sky is falling.
Well, Coach Orman, please pass along our wishes to the softball ladies. And I know they were expecting to play today, but it got rained out. And hope that they have great success tomorrow. They've been underdogs this whole time and have risen to the occasion every game and have blown it out. So it's exciting, and hope it continues. And with that, are there any other comments or questions? Hearing none, do we have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
I move to adjourn the open meeting.
I second the motion.
Mrs. Secretary, please call the roll.
Yeah.
Mr. St. Jules?
Yes.
Mrs. Opperston?
Aye.
Mr. Lathan?
Aye.
Mrs. Dykstra? Mr. Gonzalez?
Aye.
Mrs. Stones?
Yes.
Mr. Kearns?
Aye. The West Aurora School Board meeting has adjourned. Our next regular meeting is scheduled for Monday, June 20th. Have a great night.